Hello and welcome to The Road to Autonomy. I'm your host, Grayson Brulte. The Road to Autonomy is brought to you in part by Stantec Generation AV. Stantec Generation AV combines some of the most experienced AV experts in the industry with the resources of a global engineering firm. Stantec Generation AV provides education, consulting, assessment, and guidance to any industry interested in autonomous vehicles. Learn more at stantec.com. Hello and welcome to The Road to Autonomy. I'm your host, Grayson Brulte. On today's episode, we're absolutely honored to have Paul Newman, founder of Expotica, and Andrew Pine, president and CEO of Wenco International Mining Systems. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
It's cracking to be here. Hi.
Thank you.
It's awesome to have you gentlemen here because mining is a great use case for autonomy. Mining is a profitable use case for autonomy. And to kick things off, Paul, you founded Expotica in 2014, which in autonomy world seems like forever ago. Did you ever imagine when you founded the company that one day you would be entering the mining sector?
Yeah, 2014 feels a long time ago, but actually 1996, 1997, we were thinking about autonomy in the mines of Australia and in Mount Isa when I was in Australia. So, you know, I'm immensely privileged that I guess I've got to be at the origin story of autonomy back in those days of 1995, 1996, with the ports of Australia, the mines of Australia. So when I founded the business in 2014, I absolutely had heavy industry, mining, light industry in mind when I founded the business. Absolutely. Because for all the reasons we're going to talk about, right? I mean, the economics make a ton of sense. It's important. It's doable technically. The business case is made. And hey, if I'm really honest, it's epically awesome industry. I mean, it just doesn't get old with the kind of like thinking that you need to do there. So very exciting. And for us, it's a place that we think with partners such as Wenco, we can upend and change and really leap forward. So yes, I did.
You look at the transition to electric vehicles, mining's playing a large role in that for all the commodities that come in. Andrew and I were talking earlier, the digitization of mines is playing a large role, all the new innovations and technologies. And Andrew, Wenco and your parent company, Hitachi Construction Machinery, you made a very bold statement in May of 2019 when you became the first company to announce support for open autonomy and to champion enabling new entrants into autonomy. Why? What drove this leadership?
Yeah, simply it was responding to what our customers were telling us. The bigger miners had been adopting technology from the OEMs that were delivering autonomy, and they were telling us that while they were getting some great benefits from it, there were some also some really big constraints. Hitachi being a company that pretty much builds mining excavators predominantly and some trucks, but they're an excavator business, and ourselves delivering a layer of technology with our fleet management systems. Our customers are saying to us, we want to keep using the Hitachi excavator platform and the Wenco FMS system, but if we're adopting automation from the other OEMs, we are required to replace those and other operating technologies with closed stack solutions. So they didn't like that. There were some real constraints that were being, as an outcome of that. And they really wanted us to try and do something different. So we really conceptualized this concept of open systems, which is obviously, pretty much allows for a whole lot of benefits, one of those being innovation. And so that's why we went out there and basically put that statement out in the marketplace. And at that point, Paul and I had already started talking and we were pretty excited about what we could achieve with Expotica in time.
From the business standpoint, it says that you're going to have the ability to retain clients. They're not going to look to do something because of the openness. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it is. I mean, customers really want to have choice. And what we're enabling them to do is actually have that choice, whether that's to use the Hitachi excavator, the Wenco technology, or even some of our competitor technologies. What was the situation if a miner wanted to go autonomous with one of the other OEMs was throw out everything you were using and replace it with this closed stack solution. And effectively, they were giving up control of their operations. And I'll give you an anecdote just to reinforce that. One of the large iron ore miners, COOs, told me a few years ago that had adopted autonomy. He said to me, we sold our soul when we went down that pathway. So that's the degree of frustration. And it really was a difficult situation because they, on the one hand, they were getting great value. On the other hand, it was coming at a massive cost. but there was no alternative. So Paul and I, when we started talking, we had some bold ambitions, and we started on what is a long journey, but a pretty exciting one.
Paul, why open autonomy? What did you see the market? Did you speak to individuals such as Andrew and say that, okay, customers want the ability to adopt and not necessarily get locked into a closed loop system?
Yeah. I mean, I remember the day Andrew coined that phrase at me, because I've sort of been explaining, I just really think that we should be able to abstract away the hardware and build a platform that, that others can innovate with, you know, pretty much like, you know, a computer operating system. You know, Windows can work on sort of any hardware, and you can choose, select your hard disk, you can select your keyboard, and there's an operating system goes across the top, and then individuals and businesses innovate on top of that with a platform that's provided. And I explained how actually in doing that, you could assemble different components of the software, and that should be switchable. And we should absolutely allow all data to flow from any part of an autonomy system so people can innovate with it. You want to know that the forensics of your fleet, because the more data you have, the details, perhaps you can innovate and run a more efficient mine or change any footprints and a whole heap of things. I remember the day he goes, and we call that open autonomy. I went, yes. That is it. And our vision is that our horizontals always win in the end, always win. Platforms in the end always win. Industries often start with a narrow vertical, it's stovepiped. This is the way, the one true religion. And in the end, horizontals win. The thing sort of topples over. And we were very deliberative when I started the business that we would be a horizontal software platform provider that would work in an ecosystem and find out the Andrew Pines and the Wencos of the world and find out partners that provided different hardware and then find operators like miners that wanted to pull that all together and gives them maximum flexibility. And we will win there because we'll provide the best flexibility for the customers. We can be massively responsive to what a customer wants. Oh, it'd be really great if we could know this. Could you tell us? As the vehicle's driving, where all changes it sees, where the viscosity of the soil changes, or any number of things. And we could go, yeah, because we can be responsive because we're not a vehicle manufacturer between us. So we can bring the best of each other. Like, we never wanted to become FMS provider for a mine. That's where we met Andrew. And Andrew can do that in his business. We never want to become an operator. And that makes us super, super responsive to customers in the way that is difficult for verticals. And that's our lifeblood.
Flexibility salesman. You founded the company. You've been quoted saying, use software to change how the earth moves. That's a bold statement. And that ties into what you just said.
You have to have a bold statement. Collect the world's information and organize it and make it freely available. Bold statement. Yeah, that's a Google. And it really is this. I mean, like, we're here, we're talking about mining, but we know we see heavy industry as a cousin, light industry, places where the ODD is operational design main is well constrained. And I really believe that. I really believe that ecosystems of partners and smart software can change how we as a species move stuff. Of course we can. And frankly, it hasn't changed much since horses pulled carts. Where at the moment, we still have this issue largely of one operator in the vehicle and one operator per vehicle. Now think about what you can do if you can amplify a human and you can have one human wherever you want them operating perhaps an arbitrarily large amount of vehicles of different types as needed by the customer. So maybe not just big haul trucks, but smaller vehicles, graders, bulldozers, whatever vehicles you already had. I believe in all of that. And I think there's a common thread for autonomy across the board. And that's what we've proven out over the last 8 years. And now we drive into those verticals like mining, heavy industry, light industry, energy to do that. So yeah, big claim. And then the business organizes the way that it does that in a sensible order.
There's a common thread between Wenco and Exbotica. Both companies are bullish on software. Andrew, Wenco's changing minds. You're digitizing minds. You have digital offerings from predictive maintenance to fleet management to data analytics, which Hitachi is world renowned for. Is the understanding of software, the change it can have in the world, brought you together with Exbotica? Because what Paul described, for example, they're operating a refinery with BP and they're operating in a mine in Western Australia. It's all software-based, very similar to what you're doing to helping your customers in the mines digitize.
It's interesting. Ahead of this conversation, I was reflecting on Paul and my very first conversation. I really like it. I know. I'm actually going to be serious and not talk about cricket, as we often do, Paul. No, I really like the guy. We've been deploying technology into mining for over 30 years. So there's a lot of companies that approach us for partnerships because we have a lot of data and that data is valuable. And we have our systems on a number of mines that that customers would love to have access to. But we're selective who we actually commit to in terms of relationships. And quite seriously, when I first had a conversation with Paul, the commitment to innovation was coming out of his pores. And I got excited by his excitement about what we could do together. But I'm also a pragmatist. I've been deploying technology in mining myself since 1997. I know what the industry adoption curve looks like. I know the hurdles we have to get over. So what I saw was this great possibility of what we could do collaboratively. I didn't want to constrain Paul and his team on what was possible with their technology, but we absolutely provide a framework of understanding to know what the safety use cases are, to know what the phases are, to know who the customers are that we should be engaging with, because anything we do requires a third party, and that's the miner. And we had to find customers that had a willingness to commit to something new and innovative, understood the limitations of existing systems and why would they make this investment. And to be honest, of the nearly 200 mines that we have technology on and the 100 plus customers we have, I only called one because there was one that I thought had the understanding, the acumen that I thought would be a good partner, and they are the customer that we're now really, I guess, forging ahead with an active project. But the other thing that was really important to me with Paul was alignment of values. Paul was very transparent and open. And if you're going to do anything together innovatively, you've got to be willing to admit your mistakes. You've got to be willing to admit what you don't know. And I just thought, man, if this guy is reflective of the culture of the organization, these are people we could work with. I don't want to underestimate that because that's so important. Because when you're trying to do something new, we will bump our knees. We will have failures. And we need to acknowledge that. And the honesty, the transparency, the integrity, and most importantly, a commitment to delivering something that was real. Paul wasn't about spinning to raise capital. I mean, you heard it in what he said so far today. He was committed to doing something real. I work for an organization that doesn't talk about anything until they've got 100,000 hours of test data. These guys don't talk about what they're going to do. They're talking about what they've done. So culturally, we need to be careful when we get into a collaboration with. So no, I was very positive about our very first interaction. And of course, Paul hired people similar to himself. So it's been, and I'm not making a false statement here, the most comfortable collaboration that I've been involved in my time.
If I had gone first, I'd have said those same things back. I think the business don't often call this out enough, right? It's hard enough to do hard things, and we set ourselves hard things to do. If the cultures, I mean, what is it? Culture eats organization every time, just like architecture eats algorithms every time. That's just known. One of the things that I think we've talked about is being humbled. So you can be humble and bold at the same time. Two ears, one mouth. It's particularly one of our leadership principles, and I know Andrew has a similar set, is to be a learn-it-all. Like it's antithesis of a know-it-all in that sense. It's really hard, right? And for us, like we can't possibly be an expert in all the domains that we want to deploy with. So we follow Andrew there on that leading and listening. And there have been moments where he goes, hey, you got that meeting wrong. You did not hear, you remember a few of those, Andrew, you did not hear what that was. And I reflect on that. And the great thing about the partnership is then we can broker that and go, okay, you know, we're young in this. Like we have super strength. We're strong in some areas and there are others where we can learn. And I think that's a really good attribute for a scale up, and it just stops it being arrogant. I'm an engineer. I like to make stuff. Like the greatest thrill is when you write a text file and something big moves. That's what robotics is, right? I mean, how amazing is that? Just take it back to principles. You write a text file and then something enormous moves and generates wealth safely. Wow. And that's extraordinary. But to embed that in an industry and to transform the industry with them as co-founders, I think that's really important when you think about first movers. You view the partners that you're working with. Obviously, Wenco and Oxbotica are partners, but the miners that we're working with, they're also kind of a co-founder in this as well. They're doing something ambitious. We're in there as a partnership together as equal stakeholders. And I reckon that's a really important attribute. And if you get that right, and the technology becomes a little bit easier because you're not worrying about some of those axes. And so we look out for that cultural call as well, apart from the cricket, which is a catastrophe. But
mutual trust in the culture will define autonomy. I toured an autonomous trucking startup yesterday, and I went for the ride in the truck, and the truck performed well. And they said, what was your takeaway? I said, the respectful culture of caring And that's going to be a defining factor. The caring that these individuals had for another, and they're up to 700 employees now. Well, who's got a lower employee number? I've been here 15 years. No, I've been here 10 years. But it was this culture of respect. And Paul, what you're describing, we've had Gavin, who's your CEO, on, and he talks about the Expotic culture on that podcast. And Andrew, the mutual trust between yourself and Paul is obvious. When you picked out of your 100 plus customers and 200 minds, and you went to that one individual customer, was that you went in there with the full backing of the trust that you have with Paul for the technology. How did you explain to that customer the benefits of going with Expotic, and why Wenco is going to use Expotic?
Yeah, you know, I approached the one customer is they were rolling out other autonomy systems. So they were very well informed of the value they were getting, but also the real limitations. They had bold ambitions in terms of what they were trying to achieve with autonomy. So they had an understanding of the limitations of the current system. So we didn't have to create the value proposition in their mind for them. They understood the value proposition of what we were talking about. And that was quite important, because without that working knowledge of a current OEM-based system, and I want to be really respectful of what Caterpillar and Komatsu have done, because they've done a fantastic job in delivering a whole lot of value, and they're important partners of ours as well. So I'm very respectful of what they've done, and they've been doing it for well over a decade. But there are some limitations in the way they've designed their system, and some of the use cases that we can deliver with Oxbotica, which is creating new value, cannot be delivered. And hopefully we get into that at some point today, cannot be delivered by those existing OEM solutions. So the customer we went to, we demonstrated it. They did their own due diligence. They basically asked me, why Oxbotica? Why not the litany of other companies that are talking about the same thing? And they did a very detailed due diligence. And at the end of that, they said, now we understand why you are introducing Oxbotica to us. So that journey with them started a couple of years ago.
What are some of those use cases that you highlighted?
Yeah, so if you look at the use case that we think is the one that we should focus on, is we don't want to recreate initially what Cat and Komatsu have done reasonably successfully in large pits. Right. So miners are getting great value. So I'll give you a practical example. So if you look at companies in the West Australian Pilbara region, BHP, Rio, FMG, Roy Hill, these guys have all adopted autonomy systems to some extent, some more than others. I've just listed some of the three biggest adopters there among those four. That solution is an in-pit solution that requires autonomous zones that are contained areas. They require ubiquity of coverage of networks, and that's great, and that delivers it. But those miners also have a lot of satellite operations. So they have pits that might be 30, 50, 70 kilometres away from existing infrastructure, be that a crusher, rail infrastructure. Now, those haul trucks that they've automated are not designed for long haul. They're not designed for 30, 50 kilometre routes. So those mines, at the moment, their choices are build new infrastructure, rail extensions, overland conveyors, existing or additional crushers, or they automate a smaller truck. Ideally, they automate and electrify a smaller truck. The economics, and I'll give you a quote. I asked the guy that we engage with, and we've got an engagement there. I said, what's the value of this? And he goes, I can't tell you exactly, because that's confidential, but it's in the billions. Now, is Caterpillar competing for that business? No, they're not. They're delivering great value in their use case, in pit, large trucks, and they've got more orders they can handle. We can do that. We can do that value. And it's not just in the Pilbara. I tested this value proposition with the copper miners in Chile a few months ago. What they told me was, again, very excited. They said, so this is basically turning these resources into reserves. If we can do this, if we can deliver this level 5 autonomy system using an Oxbotica type technology, and we can actually haul that ore into our existing crushing infrastructure, those resources become reserves. So it's a 1 and 0. So the value use case we're focused on is that, because miners I mean, I can tell you in the space of three conversations, one of the biggest miners in the world said, we need to get a pilot going. Now, we need to be careful of trying to achieve, well, we need to be careful that we engage in a way that is going to give us a positive outcome. But the point I'm trying to make is we're not trying to compete with Cat and Komatsu. We're trying to augment what they do, deliver new value use cases, and this is the one that we think we should focus on because there's just so much value there that can't be realized.
Yeah, and that's augmenting what's already there, and that's a very positive, additive thing. I guess one of the acute things is that we set out to build an autonomy stack that was as much as possible domain agnostic. So that means the learnings that we're taking from working in some cities, in light industry, is the same technology that we can use in the long haul. So, and that's obviously mixed environments. You know, if we're driving through London, a long haul in a mine is a little simpler than Bond Street or any of those green streets in Monopoly. And so that's quite attractive in bringing that through. And I guess one of the things that Andrew and I index on quite heavily is we often say that our best thoughts, 3-6 months in the future, and like the future Andrew and Paul, they're going to be awesome because they'll have solved these problems. And if we think about our joint product as being adaptive to what the customers need as we go and explore those environments, we're going to be in great nick. And I think that sort of built-in plasticity is different than some of the incumbents in some of their areas, and we can be flexible in that sense. And a great example of that is the plethora of different vehicle types that may be available to us. When you say, if we just built this differently and there didn't need to be a person in that vehicle the whole time, different economics open up, different operations open up, different skilling, different people employment open up, and it's extraordinary in that sense. So yeah, we feel pretty privileged, really, I guess, with the situation we find ourselves in, and humbled by that opportunity, which we will be careful and take care of as we exploit it.
Paul, when you're operating at mines, do you do the heavy construction, perhaps a passenger SUV moving individuals to and from the mining village to the mine site? Do you look at operating different parts of autonomy at a mine operation?
Yeah, we can do. I mean, we often think about our technology as configurable into multiple products. So if it's an F-150 or a Ranger or a bigger truck, we have the ability to configure and use all or part of it. Let me give you another example. We have a product called Terran 360, which is a radar-based GPS replacement for either underground or places where you're a bit GPS denied, or where you're near the face there, or just as a support mechanism. And so that's a great example of the full autonomy system with a lot of things turned off. And then we can use that in different situations as well. So the answer to your question is, yeah, we're flexible on the vehicle type. And we're also, just to really double down on the open autonomy idea, we're really open to having parts of the autonomy system integrated with suppliers of other parts of autonomy system. That's like a Lego, and there are standards on how to do that. And the way in which Wenco talked to Oxbotica, they've controlled some vehicles from Canada that were running around in the UK. There are standards on how that should happen, and so we adhere to those standards. There is then trust built around those standards. You can then build verification and validation and simulation to build these things up. So yeah, really interesting in that sense. It's not, you must have the 9-course meal and you must have all of that. That seems a little bit 1990s, this whole thing. And actually, it can be more nuanced than that. Here's what I really like, right, is that we want as many people to build cracking solutions and cracking minds as best they can with the platforms that we give, because they know their mind the best.
Andrew, what he described, I love that line, they know their minds the best. I spoke to a mining executive last month, and he was telling me the fly in, fly out, and the turnover is very high in Western Australia in some of these mines. Autonomy can fix that. There's a report, the Nikkei in Japan, where Japan is starting to face a driver shortage of the aging population. We have a driver shortage here in the United States. It's called the global driving shortage, the high turnover rates at mines. Is that one of the defining factors when you approach the Wenco's customers and saying, we see a problem coming here, autonomy can fix that so we can operate a long, sustainable, profitable business?
Yeah, certainly in many countries, the availability and high cost of having a human, I won't say manning, because a lot of the drivers are females these days. And the number that I've heard is that for every haul truck, you've basically got about $1 million in cost of labor in drivers alone. So when you factor in the salaries, the transport in and out, the accommodation, food, et cetera, it's about $1 million per vehicle. And there is a shortage of drivers. So that is definitely one of the value propositions that led, I think, in the West Australian Pilbara region to really lead autonomy in the large iron ore mines because of the labour cost. There are other benefits that they got from the deployment of those technologies, but it really was the labour cost that drove it initially. I mean, the first mine that was automated was Gavi in South America, and it was done for different reasons. I think I don't know too much about that, but the adoption of autonomy in the West Australian Pilbara was all about the cost of labour initially.
I think I was going to just riff on something there, and this is something that's always interested me in what sort of 27 years in autonomy now is there are often headline, real solid advantages and OPEX and maybe, you know, safety advantages as well in these vehicles. But quite interestingly, you often get second order changes that you never really anticipated. And one that I really loved in sort of the port automation was that someone clocked you could run the port at night with the lights turned off. And so all their energy costs just halved. Or the port lasted longer because the containers could be stacked 1 centimeter to the left every day. So it wore out evenly across the whole infrastructure. The roads in mines may need slightly different maintenance if you could really finely control it and sense where these vehicles are going. There's a flotilla of sort of second order things that happen. And almost like the move to making EVs possible, because huge EVs might be difficult in terms of energy density, but smaller vehicles, lighter vehicles, you might have more players joining the market to make those. That's kind of a really interesting second order benefit that happens at the same time. You may go, actually, I've got safety concerns, I've got OPEX concerns. But on the way of removing that driver, and I'm going to take just 30 seconds of your time. I often call it like the walls of Yellowstone, and you're going to be going, what the hell is this guy talking about? Just for 30 seconds, but bear with me because I think it works well. So a while back, a bunch of walls were introduced to Yellowstone, and obviously epically cool to have wolves in Yellowstone, right? And the wolves started chasing the elk because elk don't like being eaten, but the wolves ate the unhealthy elk, and so the elk got healthier. Win. But the elk then didn't hang around and didn't overgraze. And so the flowers started to grow back and the pollinators came back. When the pollinators came back, they started pollinating trees and the elk didn't eat the trees and the trees grew on the riverbanks. And then when the rains came, less soil went into the rivers. And so the fish sort of came back and then the beavers followed the fish and the beavers dammed the rivers and the rivers changed the rate at which they flowed. And so mountains changed shape. I love that story because it's a tropic cascade. You start with one thing at the top of the food chain in this case. And a cascade of changes happen through an industry because of it. Now, you look at computing and what that might have done for cinema or communications or financing. Amazing tropic cascades. I genuinely believe the same happens with autonomy, and in particular, the species of autonomy called open autonomy in mining. The changes that will cascade from removing that dependency of one driver, one operator per vehicle forever, and everything that's with that, the form factor, the shape of your mines, the way you operate, your energy footprint, the whole show, the amount of innovation that that will allow will be like the walls of Yellowstone.
What you described is a positive benefit to the environment. I've spent many summers at Yellowstone. It's a magical place. And what you're describing there is the same thing for a mine or for a port. You're lowering the energy, you're lowering their carbon output, you're increasing the company's sustainability. Very similar to what happened at Yellowstone.
Yeah. And I think the really interesting point is there are things that you knew would be good when you started it. And then when you've run it, you find all these extra things that you can innovate with as well. But of course, when to start it, you have to have a very strong case for why that's going to make sense immediately for operations, how you can stand behind it, how you can blend into it, how you can measure it, what your metrics are. But what I get, one of the things that drives me, because I see it again and again, is that I think there'll be these extraordinary second order benefits that we will get in addition to the prima facie one of how we start.
Yellowstone open, any individual can go there, can see the beautiful wildlife there. You can use the analogy, it's a standard. It's standard, beautiful nature. And Paul, Wenco and Exotica, you've partnered to create the global mining group defined level 5 autonomy for ISO 23725 and open drive-by-wire standard for supporting OEM vendor. That's your Yellowstone moment. You're creating this environment. Could you talk about that initiative, please?
That standard was the thought bubble of our director of systems architecture here. And when, as I go back to what I said at the start, when we had customers saying, literally, the CIO of one of our big customers said, Andrew, you guys need to do something because we're going autonomous and that means we're going to have to remove you off-site and we really don't want to do that. So that was a bit of a, let's just say, awkward moment because at that stage, we had no idea how to react to that. But one of our systems engineers came up with the concept of, if we're going to really change the industry here, we've got to do it through these industry initiatives. Now, those things take years, right? And he basically conceptualized, wrote the document, and for the last number of years, literally since about 2019, we've been convening working groups to basically try and get the adoption of this standard. And it's a process in itself, how that all works. And let's just say there were some players in the early days that tried to torpedo it because it wasn't in their interest. Thankfully, that's now stopped, because I think everybody realizes that there is so much benefit with what is going to be achieved through this transition in time to open autonomy becoming the standard. But we took the approach is that we can't do this if we look at this in a selfish way. So we can't do anything that's going to be advantageous to Wenco, because if we did that, it would be seen for what it was, and it was not going to be a sustainable solution that would ever be adopted. So we were very altruistic, and at times it's been painful because that altruism has actually not been to our commercial benefit. But we took the long-term view, and I guess, again, culturally, going back to being owned by a Japanese company, in my career I've worked for Australian, American, Canadian, French companies. The Japanese take a very long-term view. So even in the short term, whereas there were certainly people in here saying, why are we doing this? Not to our advantage. I had the support of my board to take the long-term view. And if we're going to change the industry, it takes time. And we've got to do it in a way like the 23725 standard creates. And it creates an environment where other companies can enter. So Oxbotica, there's others that do the same thing. All of them are taking advantage of this 23725. We've sent that to a number of companies so they can actually, and we've integrated with a number of companies. It's really been, I think, great kudos to the guy that actually conceptualized and wrote the standard that still works for us here and is, you know, someone that I value very highly in my team, because he's the one guy that tells me when I'm wrong, and happens quite a bit. Might surprise you, but I like that honesty, because it's healthy to have that in a company, and he's a great asset to the company, and I think that kudos to him, and you know, it hasn't been easy, and I think it is one of the important catalysts for the adoption of these systems.
I just violently agree, and it's an enormous value add. So thing where we're sitting as a scaler, I'll get a question like, well, how do you know your technology could be adopted? We go, because we're compliant with that standard, and that's taking off. So it's almost like a hallmark that if, you know, if we can comply with that standard, then we are interoperable. And so the marketplace is addressable to us. And then, and to as a partner, then that's also the route to market as well. So we see this in every sector that we want to be, especially on some of the on-road stuff. If there is a standard by which you must have an interface to comply, it's only ever a win, right? Only ever a win, right? Because, a couple of things. First of all, you have some compliance. And secondly, you get to inherit of this particular individual that Andrew's talking about, you get to inherit all the upside of that giant brain. That's great. You should definitely do that. And that's an inclusive attitude. And there are businesses that try to be exclusive. No. Just keep it all in. No, you should do the opposite. You should try and have to invent as little as possible. And then where you are inventing, be excellent at that. And then you have to find partners that allow you to fill in the rest of that value chain. That can be harder at times. When you get it, you really start dancing and it's great. So yeah, again, on a 23725, it's an absolutely no-brainer to have an external reference document that you can say, because someone else did the thinking.
Gentlemen clearly have a great relationship. You have a great partnership. Standard scale. Can you imagine a world where there's no standard for gasoline for 87? If you're going to, this gasoline won't fit into my car, or seatbelt for that matter, where we don't have a seatbelt standard. Standard scale is the bottom line. They scale.
There's even something more glorious. Like, imagine you had to have a separate autonomy management system for every kind of vehicle. Yeah. And every manufacturer had their own as well. But that would mean that would only work if one manufacturer made all vehicle types you could ever think of. Otherwise, you're going to have, we know someone that's in an adjacent industry in airports where they have like 80 different logistics systems that they're trying to coordinate because there was 80 people trying to make verticals. Madness, I say. That would be like Microsoft making Windows for dentists that only work on Dell machines. And then if you happen to be a hairdresser, you've got to have a different computer and a different operating system. That's how mad verticals look like when you're in a world that only sees horizontals letting a big funnel, letting customers get access to as many kind of vehicles as possible, then having a common interface, you know, like for example, like the Wenco FMS, that's got to be a win. And yeah, it's harder to start with, but again, that's why you can listen to your customer, you can help them with the vehicles that they want, and you can be a horizontal, and you can help them get into parts of their mining space that they couldn't initially with the existing offerings. And I think that is interesting and exciting.
Open autonomy scales. Paul, when Andrew calls you up and says, we have a customer would like to put autonomy in their mine, say, let's use Western Australia, for example, what happens from a technical perspective? Do you send an Expotica team there? What does that process look like from a technical perspective?
Well, we can. We would lean very heavily on the Wenco experience. So Wenco have known us for a while. They've seen it. They've tested it. They have an idea of where, yeah, that's out of reach for now. That's in reach. So there's a nice sort of market pre-filter in that sense. I guess then together we'd say, okay, so what's the market economics? Is this a thing that's a one-off? Is it a thing that scales quite nicely? Is this going to solve a problem somewhere else? We think about the vehicle type. What does that look like? Is there a way to, does it need a retrofit? Or is it a different kind of vehicle type? And then internally, we have a process that says, okay, so what kind of sensor suite would you need to do this? And then, and particularly, we get almost immediately get right into that safety case and go, okay, so what's the operating environment there? Is it mixed mode? How controlled is it? What does the conditions change like in different weather conditions? And that gives us indexes on what sort of radars we want to be using, what sort of cameras, or is LiDAR even a possibility? So there's a sort of a process that we go through on doing that. And again, you know, some of the learnings that we'll get with the mining customer that Andrew speaks to there are going to see us run through those as well, right through to the end. So that's typically how we do it. Of course, for interesting for us, we are the humble software partner, right? So I often say I'm kind of allergic to atoms. I'm not really, I'm a roboticist. But from a business perspective, we are but the humble software provider. So we then have to check and work through the entire ecosystem of, you know, how's the vehicle going to operate? What's the retrofit? Who's going to install the sensors? How are we going to work with Wenco on that? And Wenco take the lead on that.
As Hitachi takes a long-term view, are you looking at opportunities that today might be small, say 1 to 10, that can eventually scale into the hundreds and the thousands? Are you taking that long-term view of looking for scalability with those mining partners when you discuss them with Paul?
Yeah, we are. I mean, as Paul said earlier, I mean, the technical possibilities are broad with Oxbotica, but we have to focus on where we can get a return on investment. So scale is important. So automating two dozers on a mine in Peru, that's not what we're going to focus on. We have to focus on use cases that can scale, because in addition to the deployment, the support of those systems is quite significant in terms of people involved in the change management, the integration of the systems, and all of that. So it's a bit of a heavy lift. So we need to be really focused on making sure that we identify the high value use cases. As we talked about earlier, the long haul is a very easily identifiable, very common use case, and then focus on how we scale that. So as Paul mentioned there, what are the vehicles we want to focus on? What is scalable? What are the popular models? We don't want to be exotic. You said standard scales, and I agree with you. And if we're not talking about ISO standards, talking about standard platform of truck, that scales. So at the end of the day, we need to make a reasonable profit on the work we do so we can continue to invest. You might have heard this, programmers aren't cheap these days. So
that's exactly right though, isn't it? It's got to matter. You've got to prove it out. You've got to be pragmatic about it. There's any number of giant claims that have been made in the autonomy space, right, that are really now being shown for what they are. And, you know, we've had that North Star of, yeah, in the end, you can have universal autonomy. I think it's the same broad technology set through all of them. But dear God, let's order ourselves and show and anchor on, you know, quick, earlier returns that generate value for a customer in the long term, right? I often say, like, some of the claims that are made and some of the business cases that are made for autonomy in the broader sense are a bit like a director of NASA in 1955 going, hey, look, this rocket thing, I think there's something in it. But the first rocket we build is going to go to Jupiter, orbit it, land on Europa, melt through the ocean and find life. That's going to be our first shot. Or you can say, let's build these. Let's build GPS out first. Let's build weather satellites. Let's build communication satellites. And you build outwards. I quite like that analogy in terms of some of the craziness that's required. And the economic case just makes no sense for a lot of these. It just makes no sense. and mining makes so much sense, and we genuinely need it. Like, we genuinely need mines, but we don't need more cars in cities.
I just want to share something with you that happened today. So there are a number of companies that have deployed little systems, right? One truck, two trucks, three trucks. One of those companies sent me an information today. Do you want to buy us? No, I don't, because it's not scalable. That happened this morning. We've been pragmatic. Paul and I had our first conversation 3 years ago. We're going through a multi-phase process. We're not out there saying what we're going to do. We're keeping it very tight because we know the mountain we're climbing here is significant. So safety use cases in mining, when can you change a safety use case? After 100,000 hours of operation. This is serious stuff, right? Miners aren't going to take risks. They're innovative. And as I mentioned recently, is that miners are innovative. They're very keen to try and look for new innovations because they're compromised. I mean, they're in an industry that has a lot of challenges. And whereas on one hand, they're willing to take measured risk and be innovative. On the other hand, I think that there's a lot of false dawns being pushed out in the market with new technology companies that, quite frankly, are raising capital. They're doing enough to raise capital. And I'm not going to diminish that because everyone has to have money to survive. But the reason we are working with Oxbotica is because they're a serious company that want to deliver real value. That's why we're investing. We're working with others, but to be honest, we're invested with Oxbotica because they're serious about what we're trying to achieve here, which is going to take some years. And we're in it for the long haul. So I think that it's exciting what we can deliver, but I've got a very good sense that this is a big mountain we're climbing here. This isn't going to be, we're not going to be talking about an automated fleet next week. It's not going to happen. It's a couple of years away. We're going to take some steps. We need to get mines regulators involved. We need to educate them. We need a miner willing to educate them. We need a miner willing to work with us to mature the technology, build the use cases. There's one thing after another and after another. This is a serious commitment, and it's going to take time. The value at the end of it is huge, but it'll take time.
And that just sounds so good, doesn't it? Right? Because look at it. Here's the corollary of that, of the, you know, the other side to that coin. What's the worst thing that can happen to a scaler is you get stuck in POC doom. Oh, could you do this? And we just end up educating people of what's possible, which is why this business is always indexed on get a relationship, choose them carefully and say, that's our partner to go do this. And the interesting one, this is, and at the same time, we're doing open autonomy. So, you know, how many startups, and I remember we're eight years old now. It's like, well, almost nine, the oldest AV businesses, if not the oldest in the world. And our early years, we were just stuck in a cycle of proof of concepts, another proof of concept. Oh, we've got some data. Could you share at work? And that's why we're so pleased that 3 years ago, we said, okay, you know, enough. We'll say no to nonsense and yes to a longer term, sane vision that's staged, that's anchored with someone that is super respected in the mining domain, hence Wenco. Yeah, there you go. I get itchy in these conversations because I just want to now go and just get into it again. You know, I'm in London on an away day, and I'm like, come on, I'll get back into that. Come on, get into that tonight.
Andrew brings up a lot of very interesting economic points. Andrew, we have the backdrop of rising interest rates. Capital's not free anymore. It's expensive capital. And investors are starting to be not as patient for autonomy as we're seeing in the public markets. And then you have Hitachi. Their stable balance sheet. Barron's gave them an uplook of a stock to own going into the end of the year into 23. Very stable balance sheet. Has the ability to invest. Generates a ton of free cash while taking a long-term view. Hitachi Construction, the parent company that earlier of Wenco, it's stable. Growth is continuing. Commodity prices are rising. Does that serve as a catalyst to continue to invest in autonomy over the coming years as the rising commodities will create more profit growth for Hitachi Construction?
Yeah, rising commodity growth and obviously more consumers consuming more commodities, that's been happening for a while. I often say, do you know the nursery rhyme Goldilocks? Just right, not too hot, not too cold. I qualified that because I assumed everybody knew it, but I learned a couple of years ago, not everyone knows that nursery rhyme. But I think that Wenco, I say we're a Goldilocks organization because we're a company that can be very nimble, quite agile, will take risk. We have innovation on our walls everywhere. It's one of our values. And I've got this massive air cover from an organization like Hitachi, very stable, as you just mentioned, all the financial strength of the organization. So I think I'm in a perfect world. I've got a very supportive board that is made up of senior HCM executives. HCM are a company that doesn't take risk. They're a mechanical engineering bottom-up quality manufacturer. So I think that I'm in a bit of a perfect world in terms of where Wenco is owned by that entity. We have a very clear governance structure because we put a lot of technology on other OEM equipments and we've done that for 30-odd years. So I do think that being owned by HCM, but to be allowed to operate in the way that I've mentioned, is a Goldilocks scenario. And honestly, it's a lot of fun. My chairman and I have a good relationship. I'm doing enough of the right things to keep him happy with what we're doing. So life's pretty good. We're doing exciting things and, we get a lot of challenges like every company, but we're audacious. We're an audacious company.
And humbled, as in humble and bold. Humble and bold stuck together. I just love that phrase. You have to do both.
And you're stable. That's what we need in autonomy today. Hitachi is stable. You have a partner in Expotica that's stable. They're turning down work to focus on profitable work that generates revenue. I want to ask this to both of you, and Andrew, we'll start with you. There are over 1,100 autonomous mining trucks operating on multiple continents around the world. By 2025, it's projected to surpass 1,800 trucks. In your perspective, when do we achieve fully autonomous mining operations from a vehicle perspective?
I think we're talking next decade, realistically. I think it's going to be 2030 plus. We have a company we're talking to at the moment that told us their bold ambition is to be zero entry mining by 2030 in a new mine. Their next sentence was, but we don't think we'll achieve it. So I think that the repetitive tasks that can be easily emulated and simulated, like haulage, that's here now. It's the ad hoc tasks. It's the things like automating the blast truck in a drill and blast cycle. What happens when we have to recover a vehicle? So it's the exceptions that will be very difficult to automate. So I think we're probably, where are we now, 2022? I think that personally, I think we're 10 years away. I also think one of the other items that is worth mentioning is there's a lot of energy and focus now going towards electrification. To hit the 2030 reduction in carbon emission targets a lot of companies have put out there. So I think a lot of the brains and horsepower is actually now not purely focused on the benefits of automation. It's focused on electrification, reducing that carbon emission, and autonomy. Because those two things coupled together create a whole lot of new value, as we talked about a little bit earlier. My bet is 2030 to 2032, you'll start to see companies saying there is zero entry operation, but I don't think it'll be before then.
I think that sounds about right. There's a chance in there that just towards the end of that era, it suddenly starts rushing at you a little bit quicker. And one of the reasons I think about that is we may start to rethink how some of these sites operate because the autonomy is getting so close. And so it's not fitting in exactly how it's done now. You can start to change other things about it. So quite often at the end, just as the technology, like, you know, mobile phones were slow, where they were slow, they're too big. Oh, wow, we've suddenly got an iPhone. So something nonlinear does happen towards those delivery dates because you are then starting to go through a bit of a hockey stick. But again, just that, you know, it's always like, it's the exceptions that are hard. And like, you know, what do you do if you need to do a recovery? How are you going to get in there? Is that going to be safe? What does that look for operations? And then some of the complicated tasks that involve sort of equivalent of manipulation. So you've got a lot of contact dynamics and you're actually manipulating the ore there. That's a little bit harder than the straight portage cases where you're basically automating transit. So yeah, on that sort of time frame, I think. But wow, what a diversity of vehicles and opportunities on the way to that.
Andrew, on the sustainability forefront, what role can autonomy play in decarbonizing mining operations? Is it getting rid of idling? What other ways can autonomy decarbonize mines?
Well, I think it really, in my mind, it goes back to what is the truck that's the primary hauling unit. So if you look at where the lithium-ion battery technology is right now, to electrify an ultra-class haul truck, the technology doesn't exist right at the moment. So it's a couple of years away, probably 2026, 2027. So if that is your truck platform, then it's going to be a couple of years away until you can electrify that truck, but also use it in a productive manner, right? The fast charging and all that sort of stuff, that's still a few years away. However, if you're using a smaller truck that isn't going to deplete the battery faster, then that can be electrified much quicker. So certainly the miners we're talking to, they're creating use cases around using a smaller profile truck. It dovetails into that long haul use case. But if I'm using a 60, 80 ton payload truck, then I can electrify that thing much faster. So I think that is a key plank of the miners starting to achieve some of their objectives of reducing carbon emissions. And if you see some of the announcements, I'm not sure you have, from Caterpillar and others, they're talking about prototypes being available very soon, moving into proof of value by 2027. So it's that's a few years away in the ultra-class haul truck. So I think it's a smaller profile truck is a central plank to help them start on that journey.
Paul, from a software perspective, do you have to rebuild the stack, modify the stack as you're going to an electric vehicle versus a heavy-duty internal combustion engine vehicle?
No. I mean, there are some details down at the bottom of the stack around, you know, gear ratios as you change through gears on an internal combustion engine, and the electric drives may be a bit more smoother. But quite a lot of vehicles obviously also have an interface that wraps that drivetrain completely, and we can be adapted to the dynamics. So no, not really. There are other things that we spend some analysis of, the kind of sensors, where those sensors need to be, redundancy. You need redundancy in sensor type and independence of sensor type and redundancy of algorithms and independence of algorithms. So we think about those. But, I mean, actually, our experience is that the electric drive vehicles are actually substantially easier just because of the simplicity of the drive, and you're not going through gears and clutches and all kinds of non-linearities.
It's scalable. Paul, I have to give you credit. You got a great partner here in Wenco. I love the cricket back and forth, the mutual respect and trust. You have a really solid foundation to build something special that's scalable. As Wenco and Expotica continue to scale and grow, how do you see the relationship evolving and maturing?
I think along this vector, I think we'll have more successful programs together. We'll have extraordinary use cases. We'll start innovating together. We'll probably bring other partners into it and say, hey, can you innovate with and invent with what we've built? We'll keep growing. We decided that we're in mining and we're there. And like we said, we're sticky and not fly by night. So stronger and stronger, huh? I think.
Andrew, how do you see it evolving?
I think that we'll continue to share challenges, solve the problems collaboratively. We'll probably have some uncomfortable conversations when things are going wrong, which they will undoubtedly, because what we're trying to do isn't easy. I think that I can't see us heading off in a tangent. I think that we're very committed to being the tip of the spear as we get this into the mining industry. And I think that we've got a pretty exciting future together. And I really appreciate the technology capabilities of Oxbotica, and if they can focus on their core strength and we can focus on deployment, choosing the right customers, the right use cases, and making sure that we're developing our technology in such a way that we're delivering incremental value as well. So, for example, if I've got an electrified truck, I need to have an activity dispatch application to actually recharge that truck. So we're focusing on, well, where's the value we need to add from a software point of view? So in 2-3 years' time in the future, when that platform is electrified truck and there's a lot more of them, how is that all going to be dispatched and managed? And literally next, I'm talking to an emulation company that we're collaborating with to add that capability to what we do currently.
And also, I think there's a world of unexplored data products here that we can think of when we're so open with the data from inside the autonomy stack of what it perceives, what it finds, what it behaves, what's changed. There's a lot of thinking that we're going to do on how we can enable extraordinary things for our customers with access to data in a way that's just simply not available at the moment in a vertical world. And we can be open about that and commercially courageous, but also stimulate an industry that we'll be at the heart of. And we've talked about that a lot. There's so much to be done. You can do it in a different way.
The bottom line is your customers will win because you care about your customers. And if when your customers win, you win. And that's a win-win. Andrew, in your opinion, what is the future of autonomous mining operations? Does it go on multiple continents? Where do you see autonomous mining going?
I think with this level 5 capability we're now talking about, it becomes much more universally deployable. And what I mean by that is the barriers are just going to be reduced so significantly in that you don't need to be a tier 1 miner with huge balance sheet and financial capability to adopt automation. So I think what we're doing is we're making it much more accessible. I don't think autonomy is going to be universally deployed in markets where there's low labor cost, because miners have a corporate social responsibility in developing countries to offer supply jobs. So I think it's a ways away in markets like that for other reasons. But I do think what we're talking about here is an enabling technology to make it much more universally deployed. So those deposits that are marginally economic or maybe not economic can be added to reserves, and I think that's really quite significant.
I think vehicle fleets will appear to be homogenous, but will actually be heterogeneous. So different vehicle types appearing in a single logistics operation for miners. I think that's important for a single interface. Again, the electrification is for sure to be there. I think we'll see other software players. I hope we do see other softwares playing, joining this marketplace and generating competition and innovation. You have to have a vibrant ecosystem for invention. I care profoundly about the decarbonization of mining and what we can do there. And it's a privilege to be in a partnership where we can really credibly say this is going to change the carbon footprint of mining because of a tropic cascade, because of the walls of Yellowstone. And I think that would be a great way to end, is just remember that the walls of Yellowstone, it felt like it was about some dogs, but in the end, the mountains change shape. And isn't that what mining's about too?
Gentlemen, this has been a fantastic conversation. Perhaps we can all take in a cricket match one day, because I'm sure that would be an interesting conversation.
A requirement for all humans, right? All humans have to do two things. They have to go to Iceland, because it's extraordinary, and they have to go and watch a five-day test match where the UK beats Australia and Australia weep. I think that's just really important. Oh, Andrew's just like, I'm not going to engage.
I think that we won overnight, but we lost a series recently, so I'm humble. I'm humble about the Australian cricket team at the moment.
Oh, there's always a bit of cricket banter. This has been great. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us. It's just great, and it's always great to be on with Andrew. And this is
It's been fun.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, I've been humbled by this conversation. I thank you for shedding incredible light into your partnership that's based on mutual trust into the global mining operations, because the future is bright, the future is autonomous, and the future is the Wenco Oxbotica partnership. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
Thank you for listening to the Road to Autonomy podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Want to get in touch? Follow us on Twitter at Road to Autonomy, or email podcast@brulteco.com. The Road to Autonomy is produced by Brulte & Company. The views and opinions expressed on the Road to Autonomy podcast do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Brulte & Company. The content discussed on this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as legal, tax, investment, or business advice.